This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. Across Iraq, people with backhoes and shovels are finding mass graves every few days, despite pleas from Iraqis who want to prosecute those responsible from the former regime. U.S. authorities have done little to gather evidence at these sites, so human rights investigators are doing the job. NPR's Christopher Joyce reports on how one man is pursuing the mass murderers of Iraq.
For over a week, Iraqis have been digging in this parched field near the town of Hilla. They've retrieved about 3,000 sets of bones, the remains of their relatives and friends who disappeared after a Shia uprising in 1991. Thousands more lie in plastic bags along open pits. Peter Buchart roams through the crowd. He's a war crimes investigator for the group Human Rights Watch.
Let's see what the Marines are up to.
U.S. Marines arrived several days after the digging began. They offered tents and water, but did not participate. Buchart finds Lieutenant Colonel David Rababy.
There's about four or five different sites out there, as you know. Those that have not been able to be identified will be buried here.
So there's going to be no additional effort to try to identify those remains?
That's the Iraqis' wish. Once they start excavating, though, as you know, as you've been out here and you've seen, there's really nothing we can do. I mean, if we were to try to stop them from excavating, we'd literally have a riot on our hands.
Buchart disagrees. He says forensic experts can work simultaneously with people trying to recover the remains of their relatives. What the experts look for are shell casings, bindings around the wrists, the bodies of women and children, evidence of mass murder, and it's here. Literally scattered on the ground.
This is a skull with a blindfold on it. The blindfold was right over our eyes. But this right here will be a crucial piece of evidence if it was properly preserved.
Buchart says there's other kind of evidence, eyewitness accounts, for example. Buchart and his translator drive along a rutted road that separates sun-baked fields. In the distance, there's an old brick factory and a farmhouse. He's looking for the farmer.
What amazes me is just how many answers there are about what's happened to these people. You know, everywhere we go, we find Iraqis who were eyewitnesses to a lot of these events and who kept quiet for decades, you know? I mean, it just shows you the kind of levels of fear which existed in this country for so long. Salaam alaikum. We're from Human Rights Watch. It's an international organization.
At the farm, he meets the landowner, Hassan Muhsin. He is 40 years old, has 9 children, and says he will soon take a second wife. He offers goat's milk and agrees to tell his story.
I want him to tell me only what he saw himself, not what he heard from other people, okay?
It was March of 1991, he says. After the Shia revolt, Ba'ath party members took people from the street and detained them at the nearby Mahawil military camp.
They used to bring people from Mahawil to this site, and their eyes are bound and their hands are bound.
Their eyes are covered?
Yes.
They dig a hole and open the fire on them and bury them in the hole.
As Buchart takes notes, the farmer explains that men in uniforms or wearing Ba'ath party colors came every day during that march. They arrived at 9 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. Each time, they executed one or two busloads of people. Muhsin says that 2 years after the killings, he and other villagers were arrested and interrogated by authorities in Hilla.
They accused us as you loot the bodies of the martyrs and take them to their families.
So they were accused of opening the mass grave.
If we had the chance to open the mass grave, we would do it, but we will die immediately if we try to open it.
After the interview, Buchart goes over his notes. He says the story about the interrogation is critical.
It's very important to establish that there was widespread knowledge about this grave, that it wasn't just kind of a rogue operation, that this was actually state policy to execute people like this and bury them in the mass grave.
At the gravesite, Marines are now photographing remains, but it's probably too late. the chain of custody for the physical evidence, the bones, has been broken. For Bukart, the trail now leads elsewhere, to the town of Hilla.
Apparently there's a boy in Hilla who was here at the mass grave and who may have survived the mass grave. So we will try to find him.
The boy's name is Nasser Hadi Hassim. He's 24 years old now. He was a child in 1991 when he found himself in the wrong place at the wrong time. Hassim sits on a couch in the family house. Framed pictures of his relatives stand on an armoire. He's handsome, with a close-cropped beard and a steady gaze. He says, in March 1991, my mother, my cousin, and I were walking to my grandfather's house. Suddenly we met soldiers. They took us to a school. They tied our hands and interrogated us. The family was moved to the Mahawil military camp with dozens of others. One day, they were blindfolded and put on buses. Hassim could see out of the corner of his blindfold. They drove down a dirt road, and he saw a factory building. They stopped and were put off the bus. He was tied to his mother, his cousin, and his uncle. He heard gunshots and people praying.
When they pushed us to the hall, I was holding my mother and my uncle and my cousin when they started firing us. We were lying down in the hall when they started firing, but they couldn't shoot me. They keep firing, but I was survived. I don't know how. Then they brought the shovel and started to throw sand on us, but I just survived.
Hassim crawled out of the hole under cover of darkness. With the help of sympathetic soldiers, he found his way home. He said he was afraid to tell anyone what happened.
It fits very well into kind of the larger story that people are telling us. So he would make a good witness. I mean, it's very difficult for local people like this to confront, you know, their great dictator.
At the mosque next door, the neighbors are holding a service. The prayers are for Hassim's mother. Hassim says yes, he would testify against members of Saddam Hussein's regime if they were put on trial.
Anything I do is not enough for Saddam Hussein. Even if I eat him, it's not enough for Saddam Hussein.
Outside, Peter Bukart reflects on the day. The witnesses tell the same story. The dates, the farm road and brick factory, the buses, the blindfolds, they all match. Bukart has chased down genocide before in too many places, but he's devoted to his work.
Because I think it's important to tell these people's stories. You know, they break through the fog of war and they establish who was behind the trigger finger. And, you know, people ask me, it must be tremendously difficult going to mass graves, but it's not necessarily so difficult because the people I interview really appreciate the work I do, and they welcome me into their homes, they serve me tea. Even though we talk about tragedy, you know, it's also a lot about being human.
Christopher Joyce, NPR News, Hilla, Iraq.